Yeah, hello again and welcome to the Manx Radio Grassbank Project podcast. This is sort of an occasional series we've been doing for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now. I need to check the first one, the date on it. But it was this great idea we had a while back to try and renaturalise the grassbank just behind the Manx Radio building up here on Douglas Head, which for ages has just been exactly that, just a straight grass bank which was trimmed or mowed on a relatively frequent basis and has also been the site of quite a bit of building work over the last decade or so. Very stony, pretty poor soil, very rapid drying down the bottom. And we thought, well, it might be an idea to try and just do a little something with it. And by that, I mean, see if we could renaturalize it, make it a little bit more biodiverse and just treat it in a different way, not do anything special, but really just change the way the land is managed a bit and try and make it so that the wildflowers might come back a bit and there'd be less grass, more in the way of biodiversity and bringing in different plant species. So that's been the basic aim of the project, with the help of our friends at the Manx Wildlife Trust, of course. And if you've been listening over the years, we've been listening to Hannah, myself, and various other helpers who've come to do various things. We've planted a little bit of hawthorn, which is still going, fingers crossed. It's a hard old site, but they're hanging in there at the moment. We've sown some yellow rattle seeds. We put a few other bits and pieces in, some of which have succeeded, some of which haven't, but that's the nature of gardening for you. And today we're going to have a little look around, and we've got Andre Dumbledam from the Wildflowers of Man project with us, and Manx Wildflowers, of course, to have a wander around. No one better to see just what sort of life we've got here. And Matilda is here as well, who of course has taken over to Hannah as the community ranger. First off, how's that going? Is it good?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. We're very busy at the moment with events, but it's been going really well. I'm excited to see what happens after the event season, kind of get into the flow of, you know, the regular time of year.
Absolutely. And this little project we've got here, well, again, I think you sort of, there are one or two other people who do this, or other firms or other associations who do similar sort of things, trying to re-sort of wild areas.
Yeah, there's a few on the, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Oh, don't worry.
But there's quite a few places that will help you rewild it. So, you know, it's really important. You've got all these areas where there's not much going on, you know, they've kind of been stripped of all of the, what would naturally be there, and it can do a lot to help our environment, help the animals and plants we love to see, and yeah, it's really important.
And Andre is here. We haven't spoken to Andre for quite a wee while. Super busy as always, so we're very lucky to get him up here to have a paddle around today. And I was saying, it's really just a case in these sort of areas of really sort of changing the way you manage the land.
Yeah, but we've got to still keep managing the land. So if we let it go, it would just become gorse and thistles and nettles, which is nice for wildlife, but maybe not the best for people. So we've got to keep managing it and looking after it. And then every year it will just get better.
And when we say better, we're talking basically about a wider spread or just more and more species of plants coming in.
Okay, I would class better as three things. So more biodiverse, so more types of species, more bioabundant, so more of everything that's there, and more natural beauty, so more beauty for us.
And I suppose sometimes it's a case of just what people have been used to, isn't it? Because I know in this little project there have been people who've been right behind it and supported and thinking, yes, they have an idea of what we're doing, and others, because at the moment it hasn't been trimmed yet, so the grass is long, there are wildflowers coming out, there are some thistles there indeed in other areas, and some people just think, oh, it's unkempt, and they love this idea of it being trimmed or mown every 10, 12 days through the lighter months.
Yeah, I think it depends on the site. I mean, as you've identified, now is probably a good time to kind of call a year on it, because it's had its best months, and what I'm looking at now is kind of straw with thistles. It's going to be quite a challenge to identify some of the wildflowers in there. And other places will still look great at this time of year, so you've just got to judge it site by site.
And I suppose it varies tremendously year on year as well.
Of course, this year has been so punishingly dry late season. And so, that really has burnt things back. And yet there are still things in flower here. We've got a few things that are still going, and I'm seeing a few bees and a few hoverflies still humming about. So it's still going a little bit for wildlife.
So again, if you're doing an area like this, I know our man Matt is coming around shortly, so the thing normally then to do is to sort of basically strim it, or mow it as the case may be. I think he'll be strimming around here, strim it right back, and then rake off the sort of cuttings, as it were.
Yes, certainly at the top of the bank here, where it's the most fertile, then just keep removing that fertility, and then very gradually some of those, the more weedy species, I suppose, will start to diminish. Down at the bottom of the bank, I think it makes very little difference if you cleared it or not. It's controlled totally by the fact that we're on rubble.
Yeah.
And so fertility will never really build up, but hopefully wildflowers will. I suspect that, this is it's a good time of year to be cutting it now.
And again, just as you mentioned there, I suppose from a gardening point of view, when you're talking about an area like this with the wildflowers, it's almost the exact opposite of what gardeners are often looking to do, build up fertility in the land. If you're looking to actually attract more wildflowers into an area like this, you're looking to actually keep it relatively nutrient light.
Absolutely, yeah, there are some types of gardening where you really want to pile on the nutrients. So vegetable gardening, and if you've got a border of annuals, they all require lots of fertility, lots of nutrients. But now where more and more people are trying to garden more ecologically and more resiliently, so they don't have to go out and water, and so they want to put in things like Mediterranean species and seaside species that can cope with a drought. The worst thing you can do for a lot of that sort of gardening is fertilize it and add nutrients, because you pull all the roots up to the surface. And when the roots are up to the surface, they're much less resilient. So for a lot of more modern gardening, I think low nutrients is a really good way to go, because it just puts the onus on the plants to quest deep and be a lot more resilient, and just not be reliant on us constantly watering and fertilising them.
And the one thing that does seem to have been a bit of a success is a year or two back, Hannah and I went out on a much colder day than today, equally breezy, with some donated yellow rattle seed which had been collected, possibly by yourself or by Hannah, or certainly by some members of the Manx Wildlife Trust. And we basically scattered them around and healed them in, towed them in, and just sort of pushed them to the ground as best we could. And certainly it seems to have borne fruit, because there has been a fair amount of yellow rattle around this year, which is seen as good because it's a parasitic on the grass, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there are places here where it's very, very dominant. And then over the years, what will happen is a better balance will be reached. So at the moment, there are places where it's probably so dominant that very little else is growing, and other places where it's nowhere. And over the years, what will happen is that will just spread out and even out a little bit, and it will lose its... It'll lose its stranglehold over the years. But it's going through that phase now of being exceptionally happy. So it will spread like mad. And next year you'll probably have more of them.
Marvellous. Exceptionally happy, like us, really. Yeah. All exceptionally happy. Right, we're going to have a paddle up in a minute. And just finally on that one, will these places, areas like this, do they sort of find their own balance after a number of years?
Yeah, I mean, you only get a 100-year-old meadow through a 100 years old managing it as a meadow, and when the longer you keep it, the more wildlife it acquires. Sometimes it's really subtle wildlife, so species of ant you probably would never notice, and sometimes it's a spectacular orchid that suddenly appears, and it's all quite random. So it all just comes in with the wind, and it may come and it may not. It may take 1 year and it may take 100 years. We just wait and see.
Excellent. Potluck, bit of exciting. We never know. Okay, right, we'll go and have a little wander around then, see what we can see. Andre's going to take a look. Matilda has got the clipboard, and the best writing we've decided of the three of us. Well, I don't know, better than mine, certainly. And better than Andre's, he says. Okay, right, so we've all got the right job. I'll hold the mic. Andre will see what we've got. Matilda can write down a list. Then we'll get an idea of what we've got here and maybe see, you know, in another year or two's time, what else is cropping up. Okie dokie. Starting down at the lower side here, and what have we got knocking around here?
Okay, so a lot of these plants, all we've got is a burnt crisp, but I'm that good that I can identify burnt crisp as plants. So this burnt crisp, it's lucky there isn't a film of this, because this is rubbish. This burnt crisp here is self-heal. This burnt crisp here is white clover. Then we've got some things that are still green. So the really fine-leaved grass here is red fescue. Now that's really, really drought tolerant, as is this really quite coarse plant called coxfoot. They have really good drought tolerance. This plant that I think people kind of overlook as a wildflower.
It's a plantain, is it?
It's a ribwort plantain, yeah. So it can look a little bit ugly, but at its best, it's a really nice plant for wildlife. We've got a few things clinging on. So deep-rooted plants, if we look here, now that, I believe, is an autumn hawkbit. And so that's a deep-rooting plant that will throw up. Oh, in fact, it is just throwing up its first flower there. So true to its name, autumn, it will flower probably end of August onwards. It's one of the last wildflowers, very dandelion-like.
It is, yeah. I glanced at it and thought it was a dandelion. Autumn hawksbit. Right, that's a nice one to have. Very dry around here, as you actually suggested. And again, so various different types of grass. But all of this stuff will just come in, as you say, just on the wind and in bird droppings and such like.
In fact, there's one here that's come in on the wind. Now, step back very gently. So we've got ragwort, which is not everyone's favourite, but if we look at this particular ragwort, it's got a lovely stripy caterpillar.
Oh, yeah.
Orange and black stripes, so that is a cinnabar moth caterpillar, probably on the most mangy-looking ragwort I've ever seen.
That is pretty...
yeah. So even that's struggling, nice. But I think that's probably got enough food there for one cinnabar moth to get away. And the cinnabar moth is a beautiful black and red butterfly. And a day-flying butterfly too, so sort of perhaps more akin to a butterfly than a moth.
Yeah, absolutely, and he is gorgeous down there. I've seen the moths before, and I hadn't noticed him, but yeah.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to put your foot on.
Yeah, well spotted, because otherwise I might well have done. So we'll leave him in peace, a good area. Incredibly dry, as we say, but I mean, that's just the weather. It has been a really dry season, with this lower area being so stony that it just disappears. I must admit, it just drains right off, and it's, as you say, a lot of stuff burned to a crisp down here. Right, just in front of us, to go up the bank. Well, I can see a little, I think that's, certainly I haven't put it in, but I've still seen a bit of gorse there, I think.
There is a bit of gorse. Now, I'd really watch out for the gorse, because on a bank like this, the gorse could take over. In fact, I would go as far as to say, dig it out.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, right. I know it feels a bit extreme. Gorse is great for wildlife, but it is also great at taking over wildlife-rich areas and turning them into just huge gorse areas. If you leave that for one more year, it'll probably start flowering and then seeding, and you get more and more gorse. And probably the best way of doing it is just on a quiet afternoon, coming down here with a hoe or a spade and just taking that one out, roguing out those more invasive plants. Does feel wrong when you're trying to rewild something, but sometimes it just needs that sort of little hand of management just to keep everything on track.
So that will just get a little bit too invasive. So right, I'll make a note of that. We can remove that one out, all right. And now what's that just up behind it? Is that some sort of vetch?
Okay, related to a vetch, in fact it's called a vetchling. So this is called yellow vetchling. It's no longer yellow because the flowers would have been yellow, but we've got big black seed heads here.
Yeah,
and that would have been quite, in fact there's one little flower just left over there. Lovely little pea-like flower. And a couple of weeks ago, that would have been very attractive, and it will continue to spread. So that will grow, and I can see sort of patches of it trying to spread out around.
That's very good. Just ahead of us, we have one of those little looks like a little centre patch of a yellow rattle coming up. Is it?
Yep. So a yellow rattle, probably just sort of questing out into an area of this meadow vetchling, and if in the spring the grass is low enough, the yellow rattle will germinate. If the grass is quite tall, it will germinate and die. If the grass is short, it will germinate and come to dominate.
Okie dokie. Now I can see again just to the left of that, there's a bit of bramble coming in. What do we do with bramble? Is that best to leave, best to remove in these areas?
It's again something that you really don't want, but that one you can probably just say, as long as it gets cut down every year, and it'll be cut down this year, not really going to spread. You know, at this time of year, bramble just quests out with long shoots and tries to spread, so cutting that down in this next week or two will nip that in the bud and just keep it where it is. Again, bramble around the outside, it gives you blackberries and all sorts of goodness for the wildlife, but in the middle of the meadow we wouldn't want it to take over. I wouldn't get worried about it just yet, though.
Okie doke, that sounds good. Right, should we go a little bit further up and see what we can see without hopefully going on our arses? If you'll excuse my French. Right, here we go. A little bit steep down this lower end. But till they're having a good shufty underneath to see what's there. Oh, look at this. Now, here we are. You can hear well-named yellow rattle. Listen to that. It's almost like a mini forest of yellow rattle here.
Yeah, this is what I said. When the first few years of yellow rattle coming in, it does become quite abundant. And what you can see is underneath it, there's very little going on. There's a little bit of bird's foot trefoil you can just see here. And it's surviving, but it's not doing very well. But in a few years' time, this yellow rattle would normally kind of become a little bit sparser, and other plants just get that chance to get their elbows out and start competing again. But it's really good to have just this one phase of the yellow rattle going through, kind of calming all the vegetation out around it, and giving those wildflowers a bit of a chance to dominate.
So it's not a problem then, because obviously when this is going to get strimmed, presumably it's going to scatter the seeds hither and thither, but that's going to be okay.
Yeah, well, we've had a bit of wind over the last week, and I think the vast majority of seeds have already gone. I'll just have a look to see if there's a few left.
Oh yeah, there's a couple there.
But 99% of it is already spread. And so most of them will spread within a few centimetres of the plant, but a few of them will be caught by the wind and go a bit further afield.
Okie dokie. And yeah, it's fantastic. You can really hear that stuff very, very obvious when you see it. And amazing, really, because like I said, a few years ago, there was none of this, none of the yellow rattle here at all. It was just sort of grass or some of the various grasses. There's always been a fair number of thistles, good, bad or indifferent.
Great for wildlife. I think it's probably aesthetically, creeping thistle is not the most beautiful, but I do love a bit of thistle down. It's that thistle down time of year. It really reminds me of summer when the thistle seeds are all going. I shouldn't say this aloud on programs that farmers might hear, because probably thistle down for them has a totally different connotation. But for me, it's kind of harks back to childhood. It's only a small patch. And this year, those thistles are particularly important because we have been massively colonized this year by a butterfly called the Painted Lady. And the Painted Lady's butterfly's food plant is thistle. So all of those Painted Ladies that came in about 2 months ago in, I think it's the second heat wave of the year, they came in, they've been laying eggs, and all the Painted Ladies that have been emerging have all been emerging from having eaten our local thistles. And we should get one more generation of Painted Ladies now, which will appear around sort of September, October. They won't stay that much longer. They will fly straight up and get a jet stream back down to the Mediterranean, where their life cycle starts again in Morocco and Spain and Portugal, Algeria and countries like that.
It's amazing to think, isn't it, they go that far, and Lord knows it's a bad enough journey at the best of times with all the wildfires. Of course, this year it's not going to help them either, I guess, but just the very fact they get that far.
Yeah. And some years they only get as far as the middle of France and they kind of hold it there. But this year they've come right through to Northern Europe in huge quantities. I think last year I only saw about one Painted Lady, and this year there's thousands upon thousands of them. So having those thistles out as a bit of a welcome blanket for them, it's quite nice.
Oh, that's good. You see many Matilda in your travels around the island with the Painted Ladies this year?
Yeah, I've seen loads. Seen a lot of butterflies out this year. There's one space in particular where it's just a sea of white butterflies. I'm not sure what they are, but it's just so nice to see, and it's a nice little like end of summer treat seeing them all around. And a lot of caterpillars as well. Everywhere I look there's a new caterpillar that I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm always struggling on caterpillars, I must admit, despite my best efforts, but I've seen quite a few. Yeah, never like them when they're on my cabbage as a cavallonero, but other than that, fine.
Yeah, you just kind of got to ignore that part and think, oh, it's gonna be a moth or a butterfly soon, it's all right.
Okay, let's paddle a bit further up the bank and see what else we can go through our little forest of yellow rattle here. And a bit further up, still really dry here, but it has been super dry this season compared to previous years, so we're drying out quite a bit. What have we got down here?
Okay, so we're on a very dry patch where the rock must be very close to the surface here, and there is nothing green left apart from the moss. Now, again, some people hate moss, but I think I can feel it so spongy underfoot here. It makes it absolutely lovely. And of course, this moss is what all the birds in the spring will be collecting to make their nests out of. And having these areas that are really, really low will create these sun traps for lots of invertebrates. So this will be a great place for spiders, Wolf spiders will be all over this. They've jumped away just as I came here. So really good place for invertebrates, but absolutely of no value to anything else at the moment because it's burnt off down to the ground.
It is really, really dry. Okay, and we'll go a bit further up where we can see some of this thistle down we were talking about. Another patch of yellow rattle. We can come through here, which you can hear it crunching away as we go through. A little bit more bramble there, but not too worried about that. And yeah, here's a good, reasonable patch of a thistle here.
So the thistles are also really good nectar, and we can see there's a common blue butterfly just in front of us here. The thistles are spreading quite a lot, and whilst they're lovely, the really common adage of cut in June, it's way too soon, cut in July, they'll surely die, is going to work very well for us in the next week or so. As long as we get it before August, we should be okay. So if you cut them in July, it does weaken them a bit. Whereas if you cut them in June, they'll just come back and kind of come back stronger.
Okie dokie. So hopefully we're on target for that. So all things being equal, we are aiming to get this. I mean, again, someone told me when we first started this, sort of said, when it comes to right, when should you cut right back when you're doing this sort of project? And one of the dates I was given was think about sort of a week or two after Timwell Day.
Yeah, that's the traditional Manx hay meadow time is cut after Timwell.
Great. So, okay, we're more or less on target for that and possibly a little bit weak behind where we might have been. But that's looking good. Just to your right there, it was some sort of umbelliferous plant, not one of the hogweeds, is it? Or something along those lines?
Yeah, this is common hogweed. Now, this has finished flowering, but if it was in full flower at this time of year, it would be covered in soldier beetles. Those little kind of amber-coloured beetles that love these umbellifers. It's gone over now, but the seeds will be much loved by goldfinches, as the goldfinches will also be loving these the thistle down and the dock. Goldfinches love the weeds we hate.
Yeah, and I mean, it gets a bit of a bad press, hogweed or giant hogweed, because of obviously it can burn your skin and give you a pretty nasty burns. Is it something we're happy to see in a meadow like this?
I think aesthetically, sometimes it could be a little bit out of place. At the top here, where everything is a little bit taller and ranker, I think you sort of hardly notice. But I know if you've got a really fine garden meadow and you've got a stonking great big hogweed growing out of the middle, it looks a little bit wrong. They're great for wildlife, but they can spread quite a lot. I've certainly got them in the meadows in my garden, but I mow my meadows all the way through the spring or early spring, and so when the hogweed comes back, it's only about a foot high and it looks really good.
Okie dokie. Right, should we paddle a bit further towards the top, try not to spike myself too much on these thistles. There we go. Because it's quite dense around here, and then it thins out again when you get to this top area as we get towards the flats there. Now, what's that little one here? Is that another little white flower down here? What's that one? I didn't recognise that.
Okay, this is yarrow.
Oh, it is yarrow. Okay.
Yes, all right. Yes. Yeah, yeah. It was very kind of drought-stricken, not very good-looking yarrow, but it's yarrow. And again, that's another great... it's a great plant, and you know that if you pick yarrow and bring it inside, it will make your insides of your house smell of cat wee. And any flower that if you bring inside and it makes your house smell of cat wee, we know that that is a great one for pollinating flies. If it smells of nectar and all things sweet, it's a great one for bees.
That sounds good, right? I'll go with the bees. Yeah. I've got enough cat wee in my house with my cats, let alone bringing yarrow in. Okay, let's go to the top end here, and then we're right up to the back of where the cars are parked here, and along the upper edge, where it's quite a bit thinner. And then this patch here, which has been taken up, and this actually has been was actually reseeded a bit, because it was used in the last building project when they were doing the solar panels on the roof there, and they had a lot of stuff stored here on pallets for a long time, so it was completely just killed off. And then I think it was actually slightly reseeded, just with a little bit of grass seed, I think, in the last year or two. So a sort of flatter area going down as we get to the top here. So there's a couple of bits and pieces here.
Yeah. So there's common birdsfoot trefoil. So we saw the the common blue butterfly earlier and the common bird's foot trefoil, one of my favourite wildflowers, and it's also the food plant of the common blue butterfly, who probably would really like these particular ones, because these are bird's foot trefoils that are growing right alongside bare ground. So alongside the bare ground, those are the hot spots where the caterpillars will stay warm at night, and so they really like those bits.
Lovely. Okay, and I don't know whether we've got anything else around here or not. Now, what's this one? That's not groundsel, isn't it? What's that?
No, that's another ragwort.
Oh, it's a ragwort. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So we've got quite a bit of ragwort coming up here, probably because of the disturbance from things like rabbits. There's a lot of rabbits, and wherever you get rabbits, you get that a bit of open, disturbed ground, and the ragwort moves in.
Okie dokie. All right, lovely. And then just down here, so here we have actually, they've been surrounded by the thistles, but we have actually planted up a few of the hawthorns down here. They've been struggling, they've been a hell of a battle, it must admit, because it's in the winter, they were getting absolutely thrashed with the winds, and now they've been sort of getting slightly choked out with the with the thistles in this area coming down here. But having had a look, there's a few of them have died off altogether, but I think the majority have actually taken.
Yeah, and I think if they've survived till now, the chances are is they're going to make it all the way. They're going to grow into a hedge. And as you say, a few of them have died, but there's going to be enough that have survived to knit it all together, and it will be a quite a decent hedge over time. I think here up here in Douglas Head, when I say time, it's quite a long time, because they'll probably grow a foot and then die back of 8 inches every year, but eventually they will grow more than they will die off.
So fingers crossed we'll keep on that. Worth keeping the tree protectors on for the time being, or is it best to remove those once they get going?
Do you know what, I would probably start taking those off fairly soon. We've got rabbits, but they will probably start losing interest in a plant that has so little nutritional value, because it's kind of not grown a lot.
Yeah. So okie doke, so that's not doing too badly. So that's more or less round. We'll go down just the complete sort of little loop round here and down the path which leads to the front door of Manx Radio, of course. See if there's anything else here. Okay, what have we got here?
Okay, so we've got smooth hawksbeard, which is it's another dandelion relative. It's a biannual or an annual, probably not the most spectacular plant, but you can see there's a few flies on it, there's a few pollinators.
Yeah.
Every single flower will have something that pollinates it virtually.
And then a bit of that, is that a bit of mare's tail in the middle there?
Absolutely, yep, that's field mare's tail. It's the stuff of gardeners' nightmares.
It's a very old plant though, I believe, the mare's tail.
Yeah. If you fill your car up with petrol, it's probably recycled mare's tail.
That's amazing, isn't it, to think about it? I just remember as a kid when you saw the adult ones, you could sort of pull it apart and then stick it all back together again. It didn't seem to make any odds to it.
Yeah, it's a great little Lego plant, isn't it? Yeah. So if you've got a real problem with mare's tail in your garden, turn your garden into a meadow, because it's fairly innocuous here. It's one of the smallest plants, and it has actually stayed green when most other things have kind of gone brown.
They have. It has browned off a lot, but it has been incredibly dry this year, like I said. You can see some of the. So what we'll do is, I think once it's trimmed, I'll leave the guards on here until he's trimmed round. Then we'll take these guards off and see how the hawthorns get on in the months ahead. As you say, it's a bit of a long-term project. So, like anything with these projects, we're thinking more years than weeks and months, realistically.
Okay, so we try to introduce two species. We try to introduce knapweed and red clover. Now, unfortunately, a lot of plants died. It wasn't the best choice of years. We were a bit unlucky, but one red clover has survived. And I tell you what, that's going to produce seed, and everywhere the yellow rattle goes, the red clover will follow. And that red clover should spread now. The plant we've put in is probably quite a short-lived plant. Within 5 years, the original plant will be dead. So that has worked. The knapweed, unfortunately, hasn't worked, which is a real shame, because the knapweed is something that sort of belongs in this meadow. It really should be here. And I think we have to persist and try again.
Have another punt with that, yeah.
Have another punt, because they are really long-lived plants. Once one gets in, it can survive for decades and decades and just be pumping out seeds all the time until it spreads out, becomes a relatively common plant. It's got a good taproot, so it's a great plant for very dry, kind of infertile conditions.
Marvellous. So can we put a bit of knapweed in what, back end of this year or early into 2027?
Yeah, as soon as everything starts dying down, anywhere between about October and March, a little bit of knapweed can go in. And sometimes you just get an existing knapweed plant and we'll break a little bit off, split a bit off, plant it in. Most years it'll work. We just got a bit unlucky this year.
Well, it's like anything in gardening, isn't it? I think, you know, some things work and other things don't work, and that's been pretty much the case here as it's gone on. But overall, it's sort of heading in the right direction. Get this trim back again, get that raked off, and so we'll look at putting a bit more knapweed in. Anything else you think it would be good to do in sort of the remainder of this year and the beginning of 2027?
Okay, the only other thing missing is there's a plant called Eyebright, which, just like yellow rattle, it's an annual and it's a parasite, but it flowers a bit later and it's a white flower, and it will do probably quite well in places that are too dry for the yellow rattle.
Okay, so that's worth is that something we could sort of plant up a bit of that later in the year?
Are you trying to tell me to go and collect seed for you?
You read my mind. Well, that's very kind, thank you very much. Yes. We'll take you up on that offer.
I guess that's what I'm doing then, isn't it?
Oh, bless you. Well, as always, thank you ever so much for your time today, coming around the site. How do we get on our list? I can see you scribbling down quite a few.
Yeah, it's almost full to the brim. It's a lot of good stuff.
That's not bad,
yeah. It's a nice little variation. And, you know, when you look at a kind of grass lawn, there might be a few different types of grasses, but you're not going to get all of these fun names, especially.
I think we're heading in the right direction there and really increasing. And the main thing is, as we were saying, that as well as being just more attractive and sort of good, it's just this idea of, if you just have a lovely lawn, and a lovely lawn is great in its own spot or whatever. Here, I think in this site, which is always, I've thought about it, it's not something that's ever been cared for as a lawn or a beautifully manicured bank or such like. It's been left to its own devices. And I just think, in many ways, doing this means still a bit of work, but probably less rather than more work generally. And over the years, hopefully, it's going to just increase, even what we've seen today, just going to increase the number of plants, increase the biodiversity, and it's going to do, in its own tiny little way, it's going to do its little bit for the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going on track. I'm quite pleased with this.
Magic. Right, well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for the, look at that, it is lovely writing. Thanks to Andre, thanks to Matilda for coming along as well, and then we'll do a little update later in the year to see how it's going, and then, well, you heard it, yes, a bit of Eyebright, and a little bit of planting knapweed later on this year, and then we'll see how we go.
Sounds great. I'll poke him to make sure he gets that to you.
Oh, great. I'll hold you to that. Thank you very much. And that's it for this latest episode. And we'll no doubt be back later in the year with another one in the podcast for the Manx Radio Grass Bank Project to see how we're doing. Thanks very much for your time, both of you.